This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Newcomers to Charlotte would never know that just a few generations ago, the part of town known as South Park was a farm. When that land was developed into a mall and suburban neighborhoods, few imagined that it would eventually become a kind of second downtown, a ring city with rapid urbanization and all of its attendant challenges, overtaking the original suburban footprint. But that's exactly what's happened. Congestion in South Park has been increasing, and soon, with the addition of new office towers and hundreds, make that thousands, of apartments, it will only get worse. That is why the city of Charlotte asked the Urban Land Institute to dig into the challenges facing the South Park area. And this hour, we hear some of their ideas. We're joined by Beth Silverman, Senior Director of Education and Advisory Services for the Urban Land Institute. She joins us by phone from Washington, D.C. Welcome, Beth.
Hi, Mike. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And with us in our Spirit Square studio is Charlotte District 6 City Councilman Kenny Smith and Charlotte Observer Business and Development reporter Eli Portillo. Nice to have both of you here. Welcome back.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Years ago, when South Park Mall wanted to expand, there was a great hue and cry among the populace surrounding South Park about how this will bring too much congestion to the area, too much traffic, would ruin the neighborhood. That's not what happened. Other things came, and that's what ruined the neighborhood, it seems to me. How has South Park changed, exploded, over the last 15 years?
It's interesting. I would go back a little further than that, Mike. If you go to the 1980 census for the city of Charlotte, we had about 315,000 people that lived in Charlotte. Now, today, within 5 miles of South Park, I think we have 241,000 people. And so if you just look at this is a percentage of how far we've come as a city in close proximity to South Park. Most of that's come through infill development. It's not annexation. And I would say that as the mall and the surrounding support services have increased, the values of homes have gone up, the amount of amenities that are outside of people's back doors have really sprung up.
But you risk killing the goose that laid the golden egg. Your property values will go up until it becomes unlivable, correct?
If you work under the assumption that it will become unlivable. Mm-hmm. Sort of the double-edged swords that we're dealing with in South Park is it's landlocked, it's limited, has limited road capacity. Mm-hmm. So without additional development, we can't create any of the connector roads that we need to take folks away from some of the critical congestion points. For example, real quickly, the intersection of Sharon and Fairview gets about 75,000 cars a day. If you put that in perspective, the city of Asheville is home to 83,000 people today. So almost the entire town of Asheville drives through that intersection. We can't expand it. We can't do anything else there. So without having a road network that comes around that, we won't be able to do anything to get people in and around the area.
So you heard it here first, a beltway around South Park. If 241,000 people live within 5 miles, how many people come to work in that area every day? Do we know?
I believe the daytime working numbers are about 23,000. I've seen anywhere from 23 to 30, just depending on the source. And I don't know how you could have a 7,000-8,000 person differential, but from the two sources I checked, that was the number.
And Eli, you cover this every day in the paper. He just mentioned all this infill. It's all this population explosion out there came from infill and additional development in a landlocked area, not from annexation. This is just the tip of the iceberg. This is what's happening and will continue to happen within the 485 Beltway, right?
Yes, I think in a lot of ways South Park is almost a preview of what's going to happen in other areas of the city as they urbanize and become more dense and become more densely built. You can see a lot of the older buildings in South Park, older communities such as the Colony Apartments.
Mm-hmm.
That's about 330 apartments that's going to be replaced by three times that number, about 990 apartments, plus retail grocery stores, plus a hotel, plus office buildings.
And they just built where all these office buildings used to be, right across the street from South Park. They just built all these apartments. How many apartments have come online and will come online in the next few years?
Well, interesting. You bring up the old, when I was a kid, it was the Celanese building, but the 15 acres behind the Rotunda building was a single-tenant building. And so, you know, we're now repurposing some of those type structures. You have 650 apartments that are coming online with relation to that site. You have about 400,000 square feet of total office space that are coming online with that. I believe I saw a stat that in South Park, It's about 1,300 apartments within the past 2 years.
And there's about 2,400 apartments that are either under construction or are on the books to start construction in the coming years. So you've really only seen the first, say, third of this development boom in what's happening so far.
And here's the dilemma we face as a city. We're adding 33,000 people a year. They need to live places. They need to work. They need to recreate. So trying to figure out as a city, how do we strike that appropriate balance? And again, you noted it early on, South Park was a suburban footprint when it was first built, and therein lies some of the challenges moving forward. And that's why we brought ULI in.
Beth Silverman is with ULI, the Urban Land Institute. She joins us from Washington, D.C. You and your organization deal with these problems all over the country. How unique is South Park?
You know, I would say the challenges that South Park is facing are not that dissimilar to other cities across the country. You know, one of the biggest things the panel saw is that in the past, parts of South Park have been primarily designed for cars and not people, you know, and that is something that many, many cities across the country are dealing with. How do we design for people, get more people here instead of more cars? So I would say, you know, while these are challenges and they have their unique aspects to South Park, they're also not so dissimilar from other challenges that cities across the country are facing.
You know, when you say parts of South Park have been designed for cars and not people, I was trying to think of a part of South Park that was designed for people other than the interior of the mall. And perhaps
they park cars in the mall sometimes, so
I can't think of a place around South Park that's designed for people. But are these easy to overcome as you go across the country, as you've worked in other places across the country? Are these things easy to change, and what does it take to make that change? Is it political will? Obviously, it's a lot of money. Who has to buy in, Beth?
You know, these are very, very good questions. And, you know, change depends not just on one thing. And something that I think the panel and I was very impressed with when we came to South Park is we were invited by the city and the private sector. So this wasn't just the city saying, hey, we are stuck on this issue. Help us bring fresh eyes and some objective perspective to what's going on here. There was also a consortium of the private development community. And already that, you know, that is a really encouraging and positive thing that those, both the public sector and the private sector are talking and talking about the challenges and agreeing, hey, we need to do something here. You know, I think change can come at a lot of different scales. Change doesn't always have to be some big, bold, billion-dollar solution. I think small ideas a lot of times go a big way. And, you know, the panel during the week in Charlotte really tried to do a mix of what are some small things that can happen more immediately, and then what are some of the bigger things. And I think, you know, one of the primary recommendations that the team came up with is you have to invest in infrastructure and you have to create a pleasant and inviting public realm. You know, something we did as a team throughout the week in Charlotte is we walked everywhere. We wanted to do our own test. How hard is it to get around? How dangerous is it? If I was riding a bike, how quickly would I be stopped because I couldn't continue with the connections? And, you know, I think there are definitely some recommendations we made that, you know, are easier than others. I think there needs to be a shared vision and there needs to be one voice. And as I mentioned before, the fact that city and the private sector and the residential community came together to participate in this advisory services program is incredibly encouraging. And that's already a step forward.
Kenny Smith.
So what I'll tell you, it's interesting. Beth mentioned the private sector participation. It wasn't just limited to the development community. And that's what made this, I think, a very unique process. National Gypsum, Nucor, Coke Consolidated, Piedmont Natural Gas, corporate citizens that have a vested interest and how South Park grows, both as landowners and for their employee base participated. So I think that was a neat thing. Regarding the neighbors and where things settle and sort of opposition to growth, the surrounding neighborhoods, I think, have just wanted a voice at the table. Mm-hmm. And the process to date and some of the individual rezonings, they haven't always felt like they had a voice at the table. So at the Colony Apartment site, for example, we began with the developer a process on that about 15 months out prior to the vote. I think we had to turn away some folks. We had so many folks that wanted to participate in the panel, both from the development community, the private sector, and then the surrounding neighborhoods. I don't think we could quite accommodate everybody. And so I think the surrounding communities want to have a voice in the direction that South Park heads, and I think this panel helped empower them.
I have walked in the South Park area, and to me, it's kind of like being on an island. And if you want to get to the other side of the street, that's another island, and you got to kind of board a boat, and it's a hazardous journey if you're a walker across the street. It's not easy to do. I'm curious, as from an outsider's point of view, Beth, when you walked around that area, what were your perceptions?
Well, you know, I got up almost every morning and I would try to take a jog around the area. And that was really interesting, trying to find a continuous safe loop. And I did find some. I think the biggest one I found was, you know, the perimeter along the mall. And I actually saw, I think they were residents of the area doing the same thing I was. Mm-hmm. You know, I think what we observed in South Park is, you know, some piecemeal connectivity, but not enough to encourage people to walk and to stay longer. You know, definitely development by development in some of the interiors, there was a lot of connectivity, really safe to walk, some really great urban design that would invite you to stay, you know, longer. But it is piecemeal as it is now.
Hmm. They came to town, the Urban Land Institute. They convened and spoke with about 75 people, as I understand this, in stakeholder meetings. I want to come back and find out what they told you in a minute, Beth. But Eli, one of the things that they did come out of this with, and she's already mentioned this, was that there needs to be a shared vision. In other areas of town where there has been a vision or a master plan, has it come from government or has it come from stakeholders, businesses, residents, et cetera?
Well, there are examples of both of those. I think about Ballantyne and how that area has grown and the Bissell Company there that has developed the entire corporate office park there. Mm-hmm. It's a huge corporate park and covers hundreds of acres, and they've really maintained themselves as the voice. They actually put out Ballantyne magazine. They coordinate among themselves. But then there are other areas where it's much more heavily influenced by local government. For example, Center City, they have a taxing district, and that contributes to Center City Partners, which advocates for the area and really talks about what the area needs, how to improve it. And I think
University City area has the same thing.
Yep, University City Partners is the other business improvement district that has a similar structure.
How do they begin? Is that just a bunch of people who come together and say we're going to be an ex officio chamber of commerce, an NGO, and we're going to begin?
Well, it can be that. You could have a voluntary association begin. I think what's important from the perspective of someone who writes about development in different areas is these areas have a single voice that can say, this is what we need. And
Do they have any power? Can they make it happen? Or do they require governments to make it happen once they say, this is what we need?
Well, it depends, again, on the area. For example, in Ballantyne, they can make it happen much more easily. In other areas, they need more government intervention. So we can talk about that and how that could work in South Park.
Eli Portillo is a business and development reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Kenny Smith is the City Council District 6 representative. I'm assuming that South Park is in your area. Beth Silberman is a senior Director in Educational Advisory Services for the Urban Land Institute. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Charlotte Wine and Food Weekend, April 27th through 30th, featuring the Grand Tasting Tent in Romare Bearden Park and wine dinners at Charlotte's top restaurants, all benefiting children's charities. Details at charlottewineandfood.org for tickets. Well, traffic, we're talking about congestion in South Park today, but all over town, traffic has become more congested. Every passing year brings more cars. And some think that part of the answer to this, and we've talked about this before, is more bicycles. The city has been working for years to become more bicycle friendly, but still, it can be dangerous for cyclists to share the road and frustrating for drivers when they do. So Sustain Charlotte is now working to bring protected bike lanes to uptown. What are they? We're going to find out tomorrow. We're going to find out how feasible all this is and whether or not that would in fact encourage more bicyclists on the road tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, thousands of voters waited hours to cast ballots in recent Western state primaries. And this year, 16 states will have new voting restrictions for the first time in a presidential election. A look at access to voting across the U.S.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon for After Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about South Park this morning and ideas to make some changes out there to lessen the congestion, make it more people-friendly, and save it from itself, essentially. Kenny Smith is the Charlotte City Council representative from District 6, of which South Park is a portion. Eli Portillo is a business and development reporter for the Charlotte Observer. And Beth Silverman with the Urban Land Institute joins us by phone from Washington. We were talking about these organizations like Charlotte Center City Partners and University City Partners that advocate for and come up with best practices and ideas for areas, certain key areas, in an effort to do exactly what we're talking about with South Park today. And you have pointed out, I think, in articles that you've written, Eli, that in South Park, they primarily at the moment have neighborhood associations who chime in. And then you have Simon Malls that owns South Park, but they also own hundreds of other shopping malls around the country. Are the neighborhood associations and Simon Malls at odds with each other? Are they on the same page with each other? Does Simon Malls have the expertise about South Park or the interest in South Park that would make them a good partner for this? Or do we need a South Park City Partners kind of thing?
Well, in my experience, the neighborhood associations and the mall, at least since I've been here, have not really been at odds with each other. But I think having the mall being really the focal point of South Park, it not only lent it its name, it's still by far the largest public gathering place. Mm-hmm. And having out-of-town ownership, even though Simon seems to be generally a responsible owner, they don't quite have that necessarily neighborhood feel that you might get from a locally owned and administered business. They have to defer to their ownership in Indianapolis, and they don't necessarily want to take the lead on these issues.
But that mall used to be owned in large part, I believe, by Belk and Ivy's when Ivy's was in business. And they were local owners. They lived in Charlotte. They understood the area. That's all changed now.
It has. And much like the city of Charlotte has changed with some of our corporate headquarters and some of the financial services that we used to have homegrown leadership that had a full vested interest in the city. But if you go back to sort of this trying to create a group to advocate a common vision, if you look at University City Partners, for example, if you're going to rezone a piece of property up there, you need to meet with University City Partners. They have a development review team, and that is comprised of business owners, neighbors, but they've got a group that will come in. And so the process isn't just an isolated pocket. It's a collective vision for the area. And then University City Partners will come down to council and say, hey, we think this really helps advocate our area. And it's an interesting dynamic.
Define the area. Define South Park. It's not just the mall. Where does it begin? What are the boundaries of it?
For the small area plan, which is there are two different boundaries. ULI took it out about 2 miles, so maybe down just past Phillips Place and through part of the Park Road corridor. For the small area plan, it really stops it where the new Whole Foods is and goes down to Runnymede.
So does it go to Wendover?
It does not go to Wendover.
It goes down Barkley Downs.
It goes down Barkley Downs to Runnymede, and then
that's Wendover.
Yeah.
It changes names 42 times.
Wouldn't be a street in Charlotte if it didn't.
So it goes down that far. It goes to Phillips Place. Mm-hmm. How far down Sharon?
It stops just behind Sharon Corners. So there's a Crosland and Tate are building two new hotels. That would be the edge. Again, this is a small area
plan. Does it go to where Fairview becomes Tivola?
It does not.
It does not. Okay.
Not for this part. Again, and I'm really getting in the weeds here, mm-hmm. but for the small area plan in which the city uses when we go through the rezoning process and to look at growth, and then we have the ULI study, which expanded a little further, which I think was one of the key components as to why it was so helpful.
Does it go down Colony Road?
It goes down Colony Road.
How far?
Well, I guess it goes down Colony. It would stop at Colony, probably in Fairview, for the purposes of the ULI study.
So, Beth, did your organization, the Urban Land Institute, recommend some sort of South Park Partners organization forming?
Yeah, we did, actually. One of our big recommendations was to create a South Park organization. And two of the panelists that really tackled, you know, that section, they didn't want to specifically say, you know, this is the best method, but they did recommend, you know, explore a public-private partnership. You know, maybe that's a municipal services district, maybe that's a committee, but, you know, really putting that on the community to figure out sort of what the best vehicle is for creating, you know, the face of South Park, the leadership, the sort of structure to convene public and private stakeholders. And, you know, one thing, though, that we did want to highlight is that the group had to include, you know, not only the public sector, not only the private property owners, not only the tenants, the employees, the development community, but the surrounding neighbors as well, so that it really was, you know, a representative cross-section of the community.
One of the problems with that area is something that faces much of the city. When you leave the downtown core, there is no street grid in South Park. It's because it started life as a suburban development with winding streets and cul-de-sacs and nothing connecting, or not a lot connecting, except for Barkley Downs. Those poor people who live on Barkley Downs. Aside from Sharon and Fairview and Park Road Extension, the flow of traffic has to go through those neighborhood streets when it can. So is there a fix for that? I know that you say it's readily doable.
It's low-hanging fruit. So if you look at the Colony apartment site that has just been the rezoning has been approved, you will now, if you work for Nucor, National Gypsum, one of the folks on Rexford, when the Colony apartment site's redevelopment is completed, you'll be able to take Rexford all the way to Sharon Road. So you will be able to get off of the choke point of Colony and Morrison and Roxborough, Colony and Sharon, then you can hang a quick right. We just approved rezoning at Sharon Methodist Church, which will have a connection road from Morrison to Coltsgate with a stoplight. So we're going to take people away from these key critical choke points, which would be Morrison and Sharon, Colony and Sharon, and then Fairview and Sharon. And I think long term, real quickly, we're going to connect at some point Sharon to Park South. And I think that will do more to help the people in South Park. And that's really going to benefit the folks further south of the South Park area, because they will no longer have to go through the heart of...
So that will take some traffic off of Fairview, you think?
Yeah.
But you still have to go through that Fairview-Sharon intersection.
It depends on where you're headed. So if you're going further south and you work, say, on the west side of South Park in the Rotunda Building or Piedmont Town Center, you can hop on Park South and then bypass that altogether.
So in the opening minute, I compared South Park to Buckhead. Buckhead is in Atlanta. It is a similar situation of affluent neighborhoods that go right up to the edge of major development and right up to Lenox Square Mall, which is their big mall down there, with high-dollar homes. It started as suburban, and now all of a sudden it's smack dab in the center of Atlanta. Are there lessons to be learned from Atlanta and Buckhead here?
Well, I think when you look at Atlanta, it's almost synonymous with congestion. And I think South Park faces some danger of getting that branding problem, especially when you talk about some of the ring neighborhoods around Atlanta. Those are, you know, I've only been to Atlanta a handful of times, and I've seen the congestion there enough that I don't feel too eager to go back. So I think that not getting into that situation where traffic is so bad that people want to move away is a key lesson that could be learned.
I think we recognize the problem maybe sooner than Atlanta did, and I think having Buckhead as an example has helped our city leaders, and also think we've paid attention to date to some of the building heights in and around South Park. So we are not looking to recreate the uptown model. And South Park is the second largest CBD in the state.
CBD is?
Central Business District,
okay.
Behind Uptown Charlotte. And so if you look at our height planes, we have kept those down more towards a urban or suburban type height. Mm-hmm. And so that is one thing is we just went through the Colony apartments. So it's a big issue for the neighbors is capping the height of the building along Colony to 120 feet.
And yet even that's a problem because they are putting an apartment complex behind South Park on Barclay Downs, and I can't think of the name of the road.
It's Morrison.
Morrison, thank you. And that's right up against the edge of a 1960s, 1970s neighborhood with, you know, ramblers and split levels. And now you got this 5 or 6 story apartment building right there. And they don't like it very much.
That apartment building is in part how I ended up in elected office, truth be told. But if you look at the frontage of that on Morrison, mm-hmm. the height plane is the same to the existing as you go up.
Yeah, but it's
Carnegie.
5 stories higher than a house.
It is 5 stories higher than a house. In the abutting entity to that is a swim club.
Yeah.
And so it is somewhat buffered. But you highlight the issue, and one of the reasons I felt this ULI panel was so important is you go along Rexford mm-hmm. Over by, again, Coke Consolidated, those guys, that butts up to Barclay Downs. And, again, those buildings are ripe for redevelopment. Having some idea of where we want to head with that and how not to intrude into the neighborhoods is incredibly important.
So, Beth, you said earlier in this conversation that the solutions aren't necessarily found in big, bold changes, that things can happen in small steps and they can happen quickly and have a big impact. Give me some examples of that.
Sure. Well, just going back to the question that you just asked about sort of traffic congestion, you know, the solution isn't only just in the road network. That's a big one, and I think the panel did a really nice visual job of trying to explain that if you close the gap in the street networks, you know, shorter blocks, you know, that can really help. But I think the key is to give people options and choices so that they don't only have to rely on their cars to get from here to there. And one of the recommendations the panel made was you know, thinking about some sort of circulator shuttle bus so that, you know, if you're just going from one part of South Park to another, maybe you don't have to hop in your car. Also really thinking about making the street network safe for bikers. You know, if you give people more choices, you know, not everyone is going to drive their car. And I think it takes congestion off the roads. And some of these things are easy to put in place pretty quickly, you know, like a neighborhood circulator. There are examples all over the country of that. And then also, you know, some of the work the city's already done in terms of thinking about connectivity to existing networks. You know, the city has done some work about how you connect with the Cross Charlotte Trail, and that was a recommendation the panel had, you know, to implement that. That's great. Get that going.
Jeff, if I jump in, I think part of the walkability issue in around South Park, and as ULI panel suggested, we're working to make it more compact, which is helpful, but also to make it more inviting.
Well, Stop. Make it more compact. Let's talk about that, because you got these two big malls. You've got Phillips Place, which is adjacent to yet another mall. You've got South Park, which is a behemoth. Then you have
an economic engine.
Okay, an economic engine. And then you have these office developments scattered around. Now, how do you change that? How do you make that walkable? How do you make those blocks smaller?
We need to make and this is where CDOT and engineering will come and help, but making the ability to get from A to B safer. In my panel, a local business person who offices down off of Colts Gate will get in the car to drive up to Phillips Place because he doesn't feel safe crossing that intersection. So we'll need to come up with some traffic calming improvements at critical junctures like that. We need more connectivity.
What does that mean, traffic calming? Because that's a 6-lane or 7-lane or 8-lane road.
It is a 6-, 7-, 8-lane road. We're implementing along South Boulevard right now pedestrian refuges, which gives you more buffer once you get in the middle, mm-hmm. thus making you feel a little safer, taking out the Frogger element that you alluded to earlier.
Because some people have mentioned bridges across Fairview and Sharon in certain places, pedestrian bridges.
Is that
possible or is that ugly?
It's probably not aesthetically pleasing, but it may be where we're headed to create a more walkable environment. But 1.2 is the connectivity into the neighborhoods. I live a half mile from the mall. I tend to get in my car because the sidewalk and the walk up there, it's not a very enjoyable walk. Doesn't feel as safe as it should.
And believe it or not, I've had listeners recommend this or suggest this. And as silly, people laugh at this, and I don't think it's funny. A monorail. I know it would be expensive, but what about that?
I like the monorail question.
My kid would love it.
Go ahead, Beth.
South Park has a lot of assets, you know, and you can't forget your street network and your public realm. There is a huge opportunity to invest in a public realm here. And if you design pleasant and inviting local streets, more people will come there and stay there and walk around and not necessarily get in their cars. You know, I don't necessarily think the monorail is the easy, long-term, sustainable fix here.
Why not? I want to get an answer to that question, because we've had that suggested by listeners many times, and everybody scoffs at it. And I don't want to make this monorail thing a Disney World, because it's an actual vehicle that works in Disney World to do exactly what we're talking about here. I know it's expensive, but why is it a bad idea? Let me hear from Beth, because Beth, you do this all over the country. Why is this a bad idea?
Sure, and I'm not saying it's a bad idea. You know, I'm just saying that there are opportunities in what is already there to create something that's a strong network that has a lot of options.
So we have,
and rather than
go ahead. No, you go ahead. Finish up.
Rather than starting from something completely new, you know, as Charlotte is. You know, the light rail's off the ground now in other parts of the city. You know, maybe that's a down the line, a much bigger connection that can come to South Park.
It's never going to happen. Never going to happen. But getting back to the circulator, we do have a circulator downtown. We've had these jitneys downtown for years. Are you advocating that these, I guess they would be small buses, right? Are you advocating that they be free? How frequently would they run? What would the route be?
I mean, I think the jury's out on how it manifests itself. The one of the ULI panels, they put sort of a souped up, greater version of a golf cart that may seat like 8 to 12 that you can sit on open air and sort of guide yourself in and around.
But given the congestion of the roads already, you're talking about putting another 10-15 vehicles on the road in the circular pattern around the area. What does that do to traffic?
Well, I think if they took people out of their cars for those short trips, if instead of having 20 people get in 20 cars to go to the Whole Foods, you know, you got them in the circulator, you might lower the volume.
You talk about needing for more infrastructure. You said that South Park hasn't been enough public investment in South Park. And just to play the devil's advocate here, if you go over to the west side of town, the difference in the infrastructure in the west side versus at South Park, it's like a third world country versus what we think of as being the United States of America, even though our infrastructure is woeful around the country. So what are you talking about in terms of infrastructure and not having enough already in South Park?
I would say several things. First is the population density in South Park is far greater than other areas of the city. The West Side recently got the VA hospital. I mean, they've got this down in Steel Creek, they got the mall. We've got $8 billion out of an $800 million package that's going to provide one small street connection. It's critically important, but one small street connection. I think that South Park could use some public investment on sidewalks.
We'll come back and we'll talk more about that in just a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Charlotte Housing Authority Scholarship Fund, hosting a gala on April 16th to raise funds for post-secondary education programs for public housing students. Info at fftc.org. Thousands of voters waited hours to cast ballots in recent Western state primaries, and this year, 16 states will have new voting restrictions, including ours, for the first time in a presidential election. So, on the Diane Rehm Show, in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, a look at access to voting across the U.S. You want to join our conversation about how to fix South Park? Now's your chance. You can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Get to us at Facebook at WFAE or through Twitter at Charlotte Talks. And we are coming right back.
Next time on I've Always Wondered.
So some people coupon for everything and they have like 400 hot sauces, and that's not how I like to operate, because I know when there's a limit, I guess you could say.
I'm Molly Wood. Who really benefits from coupons? Next time on Marketplace from APM.
Join Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's South Park Talks on WFAE. We're talking about South Park today. I'm Mike Collins with Kenny Smith, District 6 City Councilman who represents that area of town, Eli Portillo, Business and Development Reporter for the Charlotte Observer, and Beth Silverman, Senior Director of Education and Advisory Services for the Urban Land Institute. They met with stakeholders in the area recently to try to come up with a plan and advise the South Park area and what needed to be done and what could be done and what could be done quickly to change the nature of the area and somewhat ease some of the congestion. Andrew on Twitter writes, great to hear about South Park and the area's future. I find it interesting that new buildings dedicate a big portion of square footage to cars. Well, that's because they have to. That's how people get there, I would imagine. Is there a way around that?
I mean, I don't see how without the lack of a critical, along the blue line where you have critical mass transit, right, you're going to have to make some allocations for cars.
And there are also zoning requirements that require a certain number of parking spaces per, say, apartment, for example. And, I've talked to people who would like to see the option to include fewer parking spaces but aren't currently allowed to.
Now, here's heresy. What about a train line from the airport through Fairview, through South Park area to Independence Boulevard?
Transportation and planning talked about this as sort of in our long-range visioning. Not necessarily from the airport, but to uptown, and the way the existing road structure is, we're not even confident through our engineering departments that we would have the room to go above the street, which is what it would require.
Well, James on Twitter writes, South Park has too many cars. Building more roads will not solve that. Make South Park more walkable, and we've been talking about that a little bit already. One of the things that, Beth, you say the stakeholders that you met with, one of their concerns was, and this actually surprised me, the dearth of affordable housing in South Park. We've been trying to incorporate affordable housing into areas all over town, and I believe the city has incentives to developers for that. And up until recently, not one developer took advantage of the incentives. So how do you do that in one of the highest rent districts in North Carolina?
You know, one point that we made when we were there is that you can choose where your investments go. You can choose for those investments to go more to infrastructure, or you can choose to have some of that go towards, housing so that people that work in the community can live there as well. You have more people that live closer to where they work, there's less congestion on the roads. Or, if that investment no one wants to make it, then you have more congestion on the roads. That's sort of the tenet of workforce housing, is making sure that people who work in a community can live there.
Well, Kenny Smith, you are a developer. You are a developer. You have been a developer.
I'm a commercial real estate broker. I help people find new office space.
All right. Well, you talk to developers.
I talk to developers.
So why haven't they taken advantage of this? And what's the likelihood that they would in the South Park area?
This is actually an interesting policy discussion that came up at the dais last week, and I think it's one, as the city moves forward, we're going to have to address. The current density bonus, nobody's taken advantage of it because there's not enough incentive for the developer to give up what the profit they'd make. Two developers recently in South Park allocated some portion of their apartments to workforce housing, and it came at a great cost to their bottom line. Mm-hmm. And one of them was north of $2 million, and that's a lot of money for the private sector to help push to solve the community issues. Well, I'm going to say one thing about the gentleman that tweeted about more cars. More cars are coming to South Park no matter what. They may come further south, and then they're still going to have to come through the heart of South Park.
And there's a sense of urgency about this because, Eli, you say that the people in the South Park area, and these are their words, if I'm not mistaken, feel oppressed by the traffic. That is an alarming word.
Yes, I've spoken with people who've lived there for a number of years, and a lot of them feel like they are really seeing things in the traffic area be worse than they've been since they've lived there, and to the point where it's starting to impact their daily lives, their routines, making it difficult to get from point A to point B. And that, I think, is when you see the urgency. I want to address the point of not being able to build our way out of it with more roads. I'm from the DC area. I lived there my whole life before moving here. The roads there are much wider. The roads there are enormous by Charlotte standards, and they are packed and clogged 24/7.
Yeah.
And it's awful compared to here.
I, too, grew up there. And Charlotte reminds me of precisely what the D.C. suburbs went through in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And the result is not a pretty one. And it completely changed the character of the suburban areas of Washington.
And I just want to make sure that Eli brought up a good point. I'm not remotely saying that roads are the silver bullet. I'm just saying that the road grid that we're working to create is going to be a tool in the toolbox.
You have said the area is dramatically different from what it was in 2000, just 15, 16 years ago. Was that part of the plan? Was there a plan? Was the plan not followed? Was the plan not accurate? What's the deal with the plan? There must have been a plan.
It's a great question.
There's always a plan.
There's always – government always has plans. We did. We had a South Park area plan that was implemented in the year 2000. It's about a three-year process. So the research really started in 97. So we're looking at about a 20-year mm-hmm. window. Mm-hmm. There were certain elements of the plan that I think are still true today. They talk about congestion back then. They talk about the need for open space. I think that where the miscalculation was some of the onslaught of people that are coming to the town and where they're going to reside. In 1997, you got to keep in mind that Eastland Mall was still a viable shopping entity. I mean, I grew up in South Park. I grew up a half mile from the mall. And in the early 90s, there were times I would drive over to Eastland in lieu of going to South Park, which has become a regional attraction.
Yeah, when I moved here in the 80s, Eastland was a much better mall than South Park.
Great place to go ice skating.
Ice skating, great movie theaters, et cetera, you know.
And I think that addresses a point that the ULI folks made, which is that the area and the city can't just count on South Park to be a prosperous mall forever as a sort of default that will drive the area. If things didn't change in real estate and retail, Eastland would still exist and would still be thriving. So I think that especially with all the changes sweeping through the retail world now, you know, we'll have drones dropping off packages before too long. We can't necessarily count on a mall that was built around a suburban model where people drive up, shop, you know, hang out to drive the area into the next 25, 30 years. I think it'll be important, but I think that relying on that solely is going to be a long-term mistake for the city.
You're looking for Neiman Marcus to become a catalog store, aren't you?
If they have drones, sure.
Service merchandise.
So, yes. So, Beth, when you talk about innovations in urban design, walkability, connected streets, smaller blocks, you're talking about new urbanism. And when new urbanism was first floated, and we've had many conversations about that on this program dating back 17 years. I mean, we have talked about this ad nauseum. And I remember in the early days of talking about this, people wanted no part of it. They liked their car. They liked their cul-de-sac. They wanted nothing to do with it. Now you're saying they do because they've seen what happens when you don't?
Well, I want to just, I'm not sure it's necessarily new urbanism. I think a lot of the principles are the same, but it's really smart design that's for people.
Well, what is not new urbanism about it when you're talking about walkable streets, smaller blocks, scaling it to people, not to cars, live work play areas where you don't need a car to get around, to get your dry cleaning done, to do your grocery shopping, to go to the park? What's not new urban about that?
Well, you know, listen, I think it's a label. I think we're just saying, the panel was just saying, let's think about some smart design here to make this a more livable place for everyone that works, lives, and does business here, and that the quality of life goes up for everyone.
You believe, Beth, if I'm not mistaken, you believe the city of Charlotte has taken South Park for granted and needs to plow in greater investment. They need to raise the bar, and so does the private sector. Oh, where have they missed the boat, and what do you mean by raising the bar?
So you definitely nailed probably one of the greatest recommendations that the panel had, is that you need to invest, you know, in both the infrastructure and the public realm here, and you need to expect better. You know, you have to raise the bar for yourselves, for your development community, for your street networks, for what the experience is like when people come to South Park and want to walk around so that they don't just drive to the mall, get in their cars, and then leave. You know, I think you have to expect more if you want to get more, and you have to hold, you know, your community to that bar. And you know, that I think was probably one of the biggest points our Ed McMahon, the chair of our panel, was trying to make, is that you've got to expect better. You've got to expect more.
Would the development that's right next to, and I'm trying to think where it is, it's on Fairview, right after Barkley Downs, as you pass the mall going toward the airport. There's a little thing with a circular driveway, and there's apartments in there and restaurants. Piedmont Town Center. Is that an example of what we're talking about?
I think so. And I think what's interesting, and I made a note earlier on this, is you're looking in and around South Park now, you're getting folks that are crossing Fairview, coming from the office building to the 6100 and 6000 Fairview. We've got pedestrian refuges. They're landscaped. They're wide. But at lunchtime, people are going back and forth from those office buildings into the other office buildings to go grab lunch. So if somebody's going to a Taco Mac or George's or Brio instead of getting in their car and driving partway across town.
So when she talks about, when Beth talks about a greater investment and raising the bar, does that, as a person who writes about this every day in the paper, does that make sense to you?
Well, I think the raising the bar discussion is something that we've talked about in a broader context of requiring developers to meet higher standards in terms of what they include, say, around retail or streetscapes, how they make their developments connect and act and feel high quality. I think the public space is very important for South Park. I think of Symphony Park, and that's a great gathering place, but it's on private property. It's kind of unclear whether you can be there when there's not an event. And South Park doesn't really have that Freedom Park like you have in Dilworth, where you really have a one space where people can just come, be together, and hang out.
And that's one of the recommendations, Beth, if I'm not mistaken, to put a park in South Park. Well, where would you put it?
Yeah, you know, again, one of the recommendations that we made is you got to have your public spaces are important, and you need more of them. And right now, you know, the only place we could identify was Symphony Park, and you know, every day we were there, there was nothing programmed there, and there was no one there.
And a park doesn't have to be the size of Freedom Park; it can be small.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be a park. It can be like the Greenway. If you look at the activation down in behind the Metropolitan, people are jogging from Freedom Park, passing the hospital, and going up to Midtown. So you can have points of connectivity, public space that we can all enjoy and recreate in.
Where would that be in the South Park area?
Well, and that's the dilemma. You've got, and you mentioned this, I believe, early on, we've got some framework just around the mall itself and trying to figure out how we can increase that existing sidewalk and make it harder. ULI goes a little more ambitious, and they push their loop further into some of these neighborhoods.
Well, you advise building, Beth, a promenade around the mall, a combination of public and private parks and trails ringing the mall and connecting public places. Where would that be in your mind, and what would it look like?
Yes, the panel did propose the South Park Loop, which would be a grand loop around the existing mall. And we identified some nodes and some rings around the area that the city and the community could take a look at. We didn't overly want to prescribe exactly where everything had to be. But, you know, there is an existing loop already around the mall. And like I said, people are using that. And if you can build off of that, right, and get that into, you know, symbiotic with the development around it, have some connections outside into the connecting neighborhood and some active programming, you know, you're creating a neighborhood gathering place.
We have an email here from somebody who's not identified, but they say, fascinating to see that South Park's development has caused exactly the horrendous traffic problems that the plaintiffs in the rezoning suit challenging the mall's expansion last decade predicted, as could have any 12-year-old who bothered to look at the plans. But now, would I be wrong in saying that the mall's expansion really isn't the problem?
I would agree 100% with that assessment. May I touch on one thing that Beth just said that I think is important with sort of the promenade? If you go to Park Road Shopping Center, also in District 6, Eden's, the owner, is putting substantial development dollars onto the backside of the mall that used to be throwaway space,
right?
Because there will now be activation from the Cross Charlotte Trail from the interior neighborhoods that will be able to get over there. And it'll be, I mean, Frank's Valley's going to put a Midwood Smokehouse, which is a huge, huge win for space that was limited to dance and taekwondo.
Now we have 1 minute left here. So, and I know that you're a politician who represents that area of town. It's one of the most important economic engines in the state, South Park. How critical is it to take action in the near future? Is there political will and support to do what's necessary?
I think there is political will and support. I think we'll get into conflicting. Everybody feels their district is most important. I think we have some really low-hanging fruit. If we can begin the grid and we can work on the advocacy group, those are two readily achievable within the next 2 years.
How much money are we talking about?
For the grid, private development's paying for what we're doing because it's going to go through the rezonings. The advocacy group is yet to be determined. We've got to figure out what the appetite is for a BID versus more of a voluntary group.
And Beth, you say that, I only have a couple of seconds left, but you say that we need to, South Park needs a stronger identity. Why? I know what it means. Why? In 10 seconds.
Well, when you go there, when you go to any place, you want to understand where you are. And if the pattern continues, where it's a series of congested roads and piecemeal development, I'm not sure what that tells you about where you are.
Beth Silverman with the Urban Land Institute, Eli Portillo with the Charlotte Observer, and Kenny Smith, District 6 on Charlotte City Council, representing that part of town. Thank you all for the hour.